Welcome to Her Leading Story, a podcast that will inspire you with stories from amazing female leaders and give you some ideas to help you design a life and a career that's perfect for you. It's totally doable, and the good news is that you'll have me and our community of leading women by your side every single step of the way. Let's get started. I'm your host, Julie Artis, and this is Her Leading Story. Hello, hello, and Happy New Year to you. I am so excited to be here, to be rebooting the Her Leading Story podcast and connecting again with you. In today's episode, I interview the founder of Squam Art Workshops, Elizabeth Duvivier, and I'll do her bio here in a minute, but I just am going to introduce this by saying I have a very crafty side, and I've attended Squam Art Workshops in New Hampshire 3 times over the last few years, and I'm scheduled to go to Norway for a Squam retreat in June 2024. So the first few minutes of this interview, Elizabeth and I are discussing what the retreat in Norway will be like. I am like beside myself to be traveling to Scandinavia for the very first time. And I'm remembering just what it's like to experience a different culture and be surrounded by people speaking in a different language and getting out of my comfort zone. All of these things are things that I know for me personally makes me energized and excited to be alive. After that, we talk about Elizabeth and how she founded and has evolved Squam Art Workshops. Don't miss the keen advice she has later in the episode about listening to yourself whenever you're making decisions about life and work. I also want to offer a little bit of a warning to listeners. There is some discussion of mental health struggles and death by suicide later in the episode. Please, please take care of yourself and avoid this episode if this is something that will be harmful, upsetting, or triggering to you. Introducing Elizabeth. Elizabeth Duvivier is the author of Stories for My Sister. She is a writer, painter, teacher, dog nut, meadow walker, and someone who has been known to walk out into the garden and forget she has left oatmeal cooking on the stove. She loves long, lazy hours to write for days and days, wild pagan dinner parties, the smell of grated ginger, and wandering into the mystic, among other things. In 2008, she founded Squam Art Workshops and has hosted more than 37 art retreats for the specific purpose of nurturing our hearts with creative play in a beautiful, natural setting. I am so excited for you to listen to my interview with Elizabeth. Let's get started. Elizabeth, I'm so excited that you've agreed to join my podcast, Her Leading Story. And I think we'll just start off by you introducing yourself and talking a little bit about Squam magic.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you. This is really fun for me because as much time as we've spent together, I know I'm going to get to know you better. Just even getting a glimpse into your office space, get to know you a little bit better. So to anyone listening, my name is Elizabeth Duvivier, and in 2008, I started hosting a retreat. It's a creative mixed media. It's actually all the things except ceramics and oil painting at Squam Lake in New Hampshire, and it's called Squam Art Workshops, and it's now 15 years, and I did it that first time as a one-off. I had no intention of ever doing it a second time. And at the time, I taught down at the New Hampshire Institute of Art, and I loved that job. So yeah, it was just a crazy thing. So I'm Elizabeth, and the way Julie and I know each other is through this community that has grown and developed over the years, where people come from all over the world. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're at the website. But I want to say it's like 47 states and like 28 countries, crazy town stuff. Yeah. Where people come from all over the world. And what bonds us and what connects us is just wild. It's this this energy field. Like, we just know each other. We speak the same language.
I just will never forget this first Squam art workshop I went to.
You remember? Well, you say you won't forget. So what year or what?
So let's see.
Was it small? Was it big? Was it at the lake?
It was at the lake.
Okay.
Which is like the most beautiful.
It is a sacred
place in the world. I mean, it really is amazing. Yeah. And it was, I think it was the spring of 19. Yeah.
Wow. That was a great year. Oh my God, because that was right before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Holy God.
It might have been 18.
Okay, but still, that was yummy. The fair was yummy.
Yes, 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 yes. Oh my
God. Oh my God.
Oh yes. And I went, didn't know anybody, right?
Nobody. That's the thing. That's what's
I know.
So wild.
And then you get put in this cabin with these sort of quote unquote strangers who you become like sort of soulmates with.
Isn't that, that's such the experience.
And people are walking, like you walk around, like you go into the cafeteria and like this, the creativity and the sort of interest in the examined life. I mean, just everything. And I don't know if you remember this, but I was going through, I had just been divorced, I think.
Yeah, I do remember. You were very raw.
Yeah, very raw. And it was one of the gifts I gave myself. And it was so healing. And I thank you for...
Well, look at where you are now. Like, it helped you remember who you were.
That's right.
We're going to talk about this more. But like, it helped you get in touch with your core self.
Yep.
And remember. And then go, okay.
Yeah.
Regrouping. Reorienting. Okay.
Yep. That's exactly right. And sort of leads into the exciting news about what we're doing. What adventure I'm joining you on. Would you talk a little bit about Into the Mystic?
I started it at the lake and it expanded and grew in all kinds of ways. And that's a whole different story. But I do smaller events, different parts of the world. I'll do it Italy, Outer Banks. I've done them here in Providence. Well, I do them different places. In 2019, we went to Norway and we went to a very tiny town way about 2 hours north of Oslo. And it's this gorgeous retreat. And it is set up as a retreat center, set up as a yoga retreat center. And it's glorious. It's called Dharma Mountain. And the people are wonderful. And the food is incredible. And there's this rushing river that I actually swam in, which is nothing more than a melted fjord. But now that ice dipping or whatever, cold plunges is a whole rage. I'm like,
yeah.
I was doing that. I did. Yeah. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Well,
people had an amazing, amazing, amazing time. And so we were scheduled to go back. Because you're just so caught, you know, it's basically you're in this bubble, right? You're in this bubble. It's just meadows. Everything's set up for you. It's the similar Squam dynamic where everything's taken away. Like your meals are taken care of. You have no groceries to run or errands to run. You just get to be who you are at your essence. Nobody even knows other people's jobs. Like nobody walks in with a business card and says, this is who I am. There's just no personality there, right? It's just... more like your 5 and 6 year old, 8 year old, whoever your best child self is, that's who shows up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And anyway, so we had this amazing, amazing time. And of course, everybody wanted to go back. So we were scheduled to go. We were booked to go in August of 2020. And then, as we all know, in March of 2020, I canceled everything. I had to.
Yeah.
Canceled everything. Same day as Japan canceled the Olympics. So I always felt very proud of myself that I canceled like the same day, but before their announcement, like, I was on it because everyone kept telling me, don't just wait it out. I'm like, oh no, I see exactly the storm.
What's happening. Thing.
Like, we're going to shut it all down right now. But that meant we didn't go back to Norway. And then the first time we began doing events again was 2021, and Norway reached out and I just said, I'm just not comfortable because we had barely gotten the vaccine. I couldn't believe I was.
Because this is in June, right? Has always been in the summer.
Yeah, correct? It was in August. And so this one is going to be in June. So anyway, couldn't do it. Let it go. Felt like it was never going to happen. And then I reached out this past summer and said, hey, you know, what about 2024? And she's like, yeah, I'll get you some dates. And then she just never got back to me. And I kind of, with those sorts of things, I let things flow. I don't push. I'm like,
okay, yeah,
it's probably not the right year. Moving on. And then literally like 8 days before I was heading north for September Squam, I get this email, hey, we have dates for you in June if you can do it. And I was like, whoa. Yeah. So I slept on it and I just got like this full yes, even though it feels a little bit risky. And it just came together. And Elizabeth Duke's stitching is so heart-centered. And Jenny Brown's work is, I know both of them really well. They're just so heart-centered in their offerings, in their guidance, in what mm-hmm. they're making. I just know that people are just going to go blossoming out there. And then I do my stuff too. So Norway is going to be gorgeous for a couple reasons. One, I mean, it's not for everybody, but for one, in June, we're going to have these crazy long days that I've never experienced in my life.
Oh, right.
It's just sunny all day. It's just sunny till 10 o'clock at night. So, you know, there's great big places to have. There's a pond and there's a river and there's fireplace. And the cottages are all just sort of set up in this like really sweet way. So what I'm anticipating, because this is what happened last time, is just me just dropping off the world and really getting into this beautiful, restorative, nurturing. And because I now know more things, I didn't know anything the first time I went. There is one of the most like world celebrated sacred forest hiking mountain, gorgeous. I mean, even in Norway, it's like amazing. And I've scheduled it so we can all go there. It's like a 20-25 minute drive. And I normally don't break the bubble. I don't take people out of it. But because we're there for 7 days, we're going to go to this sacred, mystical, beautiful, natural place and just hike and walk. And that is something that's happening for us in 2024 that's never happened before. And given the state of the world and the terrible state of the ecological destruction, to be able to take our physical selves and our spirit selves into a place of sacred beauty in June. It's not like we're in Norway in February. Right. I think it's epic. And I don't know that I'll ever be doing it again. So it has that sense of that beautiful moment of theater where things come together mm-hmm. and then they go apart. It's effervescent, right? It's just this, it's this moment. It's ephemeral. It comes together and then it's gone. That's Norway.
Well, and as I told you, for me, it was because I haven't been able, the dates of the regular Squam are sort of hard for my job. Like it sort of depends. Yeah,
really hard for academics.
Yeah, it really is. Because it's at the, for people who don't know, it tends to be at the beginning of the summer season and the end of the summer season on Squam Lake.
Absolutely.
And so that sort of cuts right into the end of my academic year and the beginning or for my kids or whatever.
Absolutely.
And
so, no, it's true for so many.
Yeah.
And
so when this came out for late June, I was like, I'm going.
Now, do you have any call to Scandinavia? Like, is that a place you ever wanted to visit?
Oh, for sure. I think I told you this a little bit, but I had, except for one trip to Ireland, I had not been to Europe in 20 years until this last summer. And I think, of course, it was compounded by the pandemic. For me, it was like having kids and a full-time job and everything. But I just didn't travel to my like fullest mm-hmm. extent that mm-hmm. I wanted to. Now my kids are older. It's a little bit easier. And I just am looking for opportunities to do that kind of I went to France last summer, actually sort of by myself for a week and to meet up with my daughter who was studying abroad there. Yeah. And I just kind of decided I need to do this. I am in my 50s and...
Which is so young.
Yeah, exactly. But what am I waiting for? Like, you know, it's sort of a core value of mine and... The opportunity to travel to Scandinavia, where I've never been, but I have a great affinity for because of craft, like the craft-centered nature of it. And I love Scandinavian design and sort of the simplicity and just all of that. It all calls to me.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited. And I had not even realized that we were going to be there around the summer, like around equinox time.
Yeah.
And that the days are going to be that long. It's
really
going to be amazing.
I think it's going to be kind of wild.
And it'll be a good antidote to what I'm living through right now in Chicago, which is the sunsets at 4:30 and
it's hard. I am a solar powered being, so it gets dark and I go like this. And it's, you know, it's 4:30. I still have several hours left of the day. And I'm like,
I know. I wanted to ask you, I know we talked a little bit about how Squam has been alive for 15 years and how you've evolved it. It was an event-centered business, which you mentioned, where people would come together and then move apart. And during the pandemic, you really had to find a different sort of home for the community. So tell me a little bit about...
Yeah, keep me curbed because, you know, I can chatter on. But okay. What happened was, obviously, there was a very social media component happening. I mean, Ravelry opened in 2007. We opened in 2008, and Ravelry was a huge part of Squam for years and years and years. So social media was there. Facebook opened, Instagram opened, right? So people were really pressuring me in those years, like 2009, 10, 11, 12, like,
place, have an online component?
Have an online Squam because they weren't happy. Just they were happy coming once a year, but they're like, we need more. We want it every day. We want it on the weekends. We want to stay in touch with everybody. You need to do it online, was basically the drumbeat. And I was adamant. I'm not a social media person. You will find me on social media to make sure people know about Squam. I definitely was a blogger early on, but to me, that's not social media. The early blogging was very much a connection thing.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I always said pretty adamantly, I don't like to be on social media. So, and B, the experience of Squam is to be off computers. This experience of Squam is to be together physically in the same space, holding conversations that can go wide and rambling, not just little likes and little comments, you know, and to be in nature, because Squam always, always, always takes place in a sacred, natural place. So it was just a big no. There was like, it was never going to happen. And I was like, it's never going to happen. That's all I said for years and years and years. So then flash forward to the pandemic. It's fall 2020, and it's like October-ish, but it happened for weeks. October into November, I started getting emails from totally different people, just completely random people. I received emails that were just saying, I just want you to know the way I've been getting through the pandemic is I set up a Zoom recurring Zoom chat with my cabin mates who are all over the place, right? And that bond and that connection and that everything is what's kept me going, you know, and kept me sane because I had little kids, or the pandemic affected people in such stressful ways, all kinds of ways, health reasons, work reasons, all of it. So I kept getting that. I was like, oh, that's great. You know, like, oh, that's nice. I love that so much. And then in December, I had a friend who knows Squam, and she's a psychologist, and she just sat in my kitchen, and she sat at the kitchen table, and she just said, Elizabeth, you have to create an online community for Squam. People need it. And I'm like, yeah, just see it. And I do my whole song and dance about the why, it's in a no. And she said, no, people need this. And then I sort of was remembering those emails. And anytime it's for someone other than me, because really the number one reason I didn't want to do it is because I didn't want to be online. But I was like, oh, if it's for other people, I'll do it. So she showed me this platform. And there's many of them now, but the one that I got onto, and this is 2021, so we're coming up on two solid years now, was called Mighty Networks. Mm-hmm. And she just sort of walked me through what I would need to do. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. It's basically like a private Facebook in the sense, for me, it's much more like blogging than anything. And I could keep it that way and I could structure it. I mean, a lot of the elements I don't like about social media is I don't like pressure to have people perform. I want people to be able to be there. And I really support the introverts, right? The creative introverts. Like, I like people to be able to participate and not have to do anything to earn their space to participate. So they don't have to like things. They don't have to comment. They just get to come in and enjoy in whatever way they want. I also wanted zero advertising. We do have a marketplace, but you choose to follow it.
Yeah.
And only things that are like, let's say, Julie, you were doing a class, like an online. Yeah. You are so welcome as a member of the Squam Love community to advertise that class. and get people to join and sign up.
Right.
But it has to be posted at Marketplace. So not anyone who does not want to see advertising or be asked to buy things, they don't see it because they haven't followed Marketplace and they don't want to. So I liked all of that. Like that was, that was working for me. You only follow the things you want. So like we had someone who was dealing with elderly care and there were a lot of people interested in that. So she opened up a whole platform around talking about elderly care. So someone who might be in her 30s, she might not follow that. That's not, she wants to follow knitting and watercolor and whatever else. So I did all that. And then what was odd, as the world will be, it was set to launch on the second week of January. And so that Sunday, it was going to launch on that Friday. That Sunday, I got a phone call, just a horrible, terrible phone call. My older, beloved brother had killed himself. He had committed suicide. And as it turned out, I had to discover some things about him that I didn't know. I always thought he was like me. I thought he was an introvert because he lived alone and he was just a very gentle, sweet, incredible human being. I was not affected adversely by the pandemic. Really supported introverts. Like we loved it. And my life did not change. Whereas my brother, as I learned the hardest way possible, turned out he was an extrovert. So even though he didn't drink, he would go to sports bars and sit. And that's how he would chat to people. And he was very, very active in community events and very active in things that required people showing up and doing things. Like he liked being around people. And so he was also a rule follower. So when they said, you cannot go out, you cannot socialize. And he had, just to underline, he had chronic depression, but he was never suicidal.
Yeah.
So anyway, that threw me, as you can imagine.
Of course.
And it actually also made me understand more than ever that, oh, no, I have to do this. This is very important that we stay in touch with each other, that we stay. Like if he had had this kind of, he would have been there all the time.
Yeah.
And there are social media things, but, and I know he did Facebook. That's a very destructive, destabilizing. It's not nurturing. It can really twist you around. So anyway, I ended up launching it in January 2021. And this is the funny part, has become like my most favorite place to be. The people who come in, they're so open-hearted. And for me, it's very much like blogging of old, because blogging is what predated my squamness. I was very, very isolated up in New Hampshire. Even for an introvert, I was very isolated.
Yeah.
And then it was blogging that had me connect with like-minded people, because there were people in my town, I just had nothing in common with them. So, and it made me feel like I was a social, like I had social problems. When I did it, I just wasn't connected with the people that I
the right people. With.
So now the Squam Love community is thriving and gorgeous and beautiful. And so that's a really fun thing. And then, and also, yes, there are people, obviously not everybody can up and go on a retreat. Like
it's
both scheduling for work, scheduling for childcare, scheduling for responsibilities. If you are caring for your elderly parents, maybe there's health issues or mobility issues. And we're not even talking about the financial implications of taking this time. So what the Squam Love community does, it does provide all kinds of good nurturance and fun and support and loving and brightness for us as we navigate this world that is very challenging. Very challenging, right?
So. One of the things that I'm always so curious to ask you about, and I mean, I know the story, like I know your story, and I know you've talked about it a lot in terms of the arc of founding Squam, being a blogger, and all of that. But one of the themes of this podcast is thinking through how women lead, sure, at your job, sure, in your career, but also how you lead in your life. And I'm always so curious to ask women on this podcast about the inflection points in their life where they really had to like, I mean, I know what they are for me. Mm-hmm. And there are some of them are professional and a lot of them are personal, right? Because they're connected. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you find yourself. I mean, because it's sort of seemingly by accident in a certain way, right? That you're
total accident
leading this community for 15 years and running these events and you're an introvert.
Off the charts introvert. So, yeah, the universe has a great sense of humor.
Right. So could you talk a little bit about just like following your intuition or going with what you know is right for you? Or like what were some of the like moments, maybe one or two moments where you really felt that?
Yeah. Well, that is my life. And that is something I take great, the word is pride. Like I'm very proud to follow my intuition because if I had a dollar for every time someone looked me square in the eye and said, you are insane, you are crazy, you can't do that. Like, because I'm generally going against what looks safe and normal. And and so that means I'm listening to my heart, even though intellectually there's all the reasons not to do it. And that's something I would say is like my number one pride in myself is that I do listen and honor to my heart.
Were you always like that?
No. And so that's kind of a long story. But the short story is when I was a senior in college, when I was doing all the things to please all the people and get all the accolades and just like everything was externally motivated. And I was very, very much not doing what my heart wanted me to do. I had a total nervous breakdown. I was hospitalized. And this this was up in Wisconsin. Yep. I was hospitalized for 6 weeks, 4 weeks on an intensive care unit and 2 weeks on like a regular psych ward.
Wow.
So I was badly, badly, badly broken. And when I came out of it, the one thing I knew for sure was I will never do what someone else tells me against myself. So like, I wouldn't wish any of that on anyone. It was a horrible experience and it took me years and years to recover, but it was like the best thing that ever happened to me because it taught me what happens when you follow fear instead of following courage. When you follow fear, like you mentioned being divorced, I am also divorced. And it was a very amicable, loving divorce.
Yeah.
Basically ended our marriage and that was all good. But everyone around me was like, you can't do that. You're crazy. What about the finances? What about this? What about that? And I think that's very normal. And I think, you know, proceeding from the fear of what if will keep you in a job that you hate, will keep you in a relationship that's toxic, will keep you in a place that's crushing you. And what I learned from that breakdown was, oh, no. Like, I'm not afraid of death. Like, I'm not afraid. What the only thing I'm afraid of is not listening to my heart because I know where that goes. That's driving into a wall at 90 miles an hour and I will never do that again.
Yeah.
So you can't scare me by saying you'll be a bag lady on the street. I'm like, all right, well, I'll be a bag lady on the street. I've been working since I was 15. I'll get a job somehow. Like I'll work it out. But what I know is I'm not doing this anymore. And so that has definitely been the gift that I carved out of that. And so the inflection points, I would say one of them is directly related to Squam, which was I was working in a corporate job. It was an engineering manufacturing company. And I had just rocketed up. It was just my skill set where people think I'm bossy in the real life in a business environment was gold. I had no problem telling a guy, sit down. Wait till I tell you to talk. Like I had no problem with that at all. And in a corporate life, they love it. You're assertive. Just kept getting promoted. And I was eventually in 2006, I was reporting to the founder of the company, the chief technical officer, had a corner office, making more money than I ever made in my life because I was always an artist and a teacher and a writer. And so I never made any money. So I had all the things and I was so massively depressed. I was there for the money and the only reason I was there was for the money. So every day was pushing myself to get in and every night I'd come home, I'd just collapse and have to regroup the energy to get back in there. So anyway, at that time, I randomly, which is a whole nother story, angels came involved. I ended up out in Port Townsend, which is an island off of Seattle. And there was an event there called Art Fest. And it was run by a woman named Tisha Moore. And it was a mixed media, 4-day extravaganza. And it's definitely the entire genesis of Squam. It's everything that, because I basically came home and said to Tisha, I want to do it on the East Coast. Could we call it Art Fest East? And she's like, no. Art Fest is what I do. Why don't you just go do it your own way? And which was great because mine has never only been mixed media. It's all been across current, all the things that I love. So all blessings to Tisha always. But in terms of an inflection point, so I come back from there. I am cracked open. I remember who I am. I don't have a social disorder. There are people like me. They just don't live in my neighborhood. And I walked back into the office and I walked into my boss and I said, here's my 2-week notice. He's like, no, don't, you're crazy. And again, everyone's like, you're crazy. And I just was like, I don't care. I will die doing this job. So I have to go. And I had nothing. I had no vision of Squam, just so you know, like that didn't happen for another 2 years. Yeah. So I was literally just walking off the plank to nothing. Where I lived in New Hampshire, I work at a fast food place. Do you know what I mean? I had no options financially. Yeah. And I didn't care. I did not. I was like, it'll work out. And you know what? It did. No, that was one. That was huge. And then I would say the second one was ending my marriage. I never in my life ever imagined being divorced, getting a divorce. No, like it was me a shock to me. Yeah. But what happened was Squam, which I was doing for everybody else, had its own. I was sort of think of rocks in a tumbler, right? You just get tumbled and all of a sudden out comes this jewel when all this stuff gets knocked off the edges. So the years of doing Squam had its effect on me too. I know this will sound really crazy to you and I get it, but you have to believe me. Have to believe me when I tell you I had no self-esteem and I had no self-confidence. And that's a fact. You are meeting a woman who has those things in spades, but I did not have them when I started Squam.
It's incredible.
And so I know. And so what happened was I began waking up to who I was, and my very sweet husband that I'd married very young and I were roommates. He was a lovely person, but I did not want to be in this marriage. It was no longer a fit for me. And in fact, it was very restrictive of who and how I wanted to be. So the other major inflection point, of which there are many, I think every single day you can make choices and decisions every single day.
That's right.
That keep you on your path to yes, was deciding to end my marriage. And again, people were like, you're crazy. There's nothing wrong with it. Like everything's fine. There was no critical reason why, except that it was no longer a fit. And I knew it. And also I knew, now that I knew it, it was just a matter of time.
It was right.
Right. Yeah. So I could wait till it was horrible. I could wait till one of us acted out in some way, or I could close it out. Right. We were both in a really healthy, beautiful way to discuss, like it came to an end. And sometimes things come to an end. And so that was terrifying for me, not for the reasons you might think, but because I'm actually not adventurous. Again, another hysterical part of Squam, because people who come to Squam are adventurous.
Yeah.
At all. I have zero adventure in me. And so the idea of picking up and moving and making a new home by myself, that was the piece that I was like, I don't know how to do this. And I had to come to credible, humiliating realization at the age of 47. I was humiliated. I would never have told you this at the time because I was so embarrassed to see it, but it was clear as a bell. I had never lived on my own. Yeah. I went to college, had a roommate. I left college, worked in a boarding school. When you work at a boarding school, you have a whole dorm and people around you all the time. And they give you your housing.
Yeah.
I left boarding school. I went and moved in with my brother who had a condo in Harvard Square and had a room and I could live there. I left there, I met a woman at work who was going to California. I took her job and her bedroom in a shared rental with three other women, and she left all her furniture. I was like one of those birds, the kind of bird that always goes into someone else's nest.
Yeah.
Met my ex-husband, moved to New Hampshire. Do you see what I'm saying? So all of a sudden, I had to come to a realization about myself and go, holy God, like I'm a 12-year-old in some ways. Like I have some life experiences to have. So it was very challenging and it was also awesome because when you go through the things that scare you most, the rewards are in equal measure to the thing. So it's a balance. Everything in life is balance. So your worst pains, your worst life experiences, I can't wish them away because the best things are on the other side of them. And then the last thing I want to say, because I know I'll forget, is this is, comes to your her leading role, is I have a phrase that has served me really well. And some years I actually gave out a poster of it to Squam, but I haven't done that probably since 2015. But it's, if it's not a yes, it's a no.
Yeah.
Not a yes, it's a no. And the reason I really pound that into people is you can practice it. You can practice it when you're shopping. So you're standing at a carousel of clothing and you pull off this shirt and you're like, oh my God, it's this brand and I love this brand and it's 20% off, but it's not quite the color I like, or it's not quite the stuff, but it's my brand and it's 20% off. You can talk yourself into purchasing something. Whereas if you simply stand and you get really quiet and you just go, is it a yes or is it a no? Mm-hmm. There's no like dialoguing about it. It's not a yes, it's a no. And that's the way you break free of talking yourself into things, because we all know what a yes feels. Yeah. And so you practice on the small things. Do I want this for lunch or do I want this for lunch? And really listen and practice on the small, because that way when the really big decisions come up, you have this muscle that goes, like, let's say you saw the Norway thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, Elizabeth's doing a Squam in Norway. I think I like that. And then you sat with yourself and you just went into, is it a yes? And you went, oh, it's not a yes. Then it sounds great, but it's not for me this time.
Right.
Whereas if you have this practice and you go, oh, let me sit. Well, it's a yes. I 100% want to be there. Then in comes the mind that tells you all why you shouldn't. Oh, but it's expensive. Oh, but you can't take time off from work. Oh, but then who's going to watch the cat? Oh, but like the mind will come in and tell you all the reasons why. But you're like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to get there. Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do, but it's a yes. It's a yes. And
exactly.
When you follow your yeses, literally it's like life just rolls out. I swear. And I've had lots of bumps, so I'm not Pollyanna. I'm just telling you, when you follow your yeses, and the flip side is when you don't, hello, suffering.
Yeah.
Yep. You'll get lots of lessons on it. So
yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, it's funny that you say that, because you taught that at Squam the first time I went. When I was going through my divorce. And so when you were talking like a few minutes ago, I was like, this is like that. If it's not a hell yes, it's a no. And so I'm so glad that you said that, because I talk to so many women who either are like sort of circling around the idea of doing something different, or, and it's overthinking, like what you're saying. It's like your mind going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Right. And then they kind of get in that loop, and it's hard to get out of the loop and really just...
Oh, you'll never win. I mean, and I'm not, I'm like, you can ask Eckhart Tolle. He'll tell you, if you argue with the mind, you have 100% chance of losing. The mind will always win. It's the heart.
Yeah.
It doesn't argue with the mind. And so to what you're saying, it's a question of trust in yourself.
Yeah.
When we give our power to everyone else, well, my mom thinks this, and my husband thinks this, and my kids think this, and my boss thinks that, my best friend thinks this. When you don't trust yourself, I have to go back to what I said to you. If I had a dollar for every time someone looked me square in the eye and said, you're nuts, like you're stupid crazy, right? I wouldn't even have to work, because that is always the response. The intellect will always tell you why it's not a good idea, because it's going against the grain. And so what I would add to that is, and I mean this deeply, 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 I believe in no drama, no trauma, no drama, no trauma. So even when I do really big, large things like starting Squam or any, I go so slowly. I think of it as going into an ocean. I'm one of those people. I do not rush in and dash in and splash in. I go in like, now my toes are in, now my ankles are in. That's how I go in. I told you, I'm not adventurous. So I don't believe in doing things that create trauma or drama. So let's imagine
you're upend your life in a way that's like, right, yeah.
Whereas if you're in a situation and you know you want to do a change and you're being called to do a change, gently, you'll still get there. Just gently. It doesn't have to cause trauma or drama. I mean, there are moments of leaping. There are moments of big shift, but your heart will be ready for it when you're there. Mm-hmm. And again, I go back to the gift I had from my horrible, terrible, you know, experience, which is I got the gift of what's behind the fear. The fear is if you're afraid of change, you're like pushing yourself into a smaller and smaller space. And here's the thing. I'll tell you a story. Okay. So in 2010, I did this beautiful publication called A Journal. And I had this vision. I was going to do it every year. Ha ha. Because it was a lot of work. But it was beautiful. And I did it. And the graphic designer was a good friend. And we were up in Maine for the day. We'd driven up and we were spending the night. And the next day, they were going to hit the printing presses and we were going to print these things. And she knew what a really massive financial risk this was. I was really risking financially in a way that I just didn't have. It was really a financial risk. But I just was called to do it. And so it was pouring rain and we're sitting across in this pizza parlor. And she just looked at me. She goes, Elizabeth, it's not too late to back out. You know that, right? You could still not print on. And I just looked at her. I was like, Joelle, that's not her name. Joelle, we're all going to die, right? We're all going to die. So what's the worst that could happen? I could die. Well, I know I'm going to die. So I'm just not as scared of it. That was my gift out of the breakdown. It's like, we're all going to die. So what most people are afraid of, it's like, it's coming for you anyway. So why not live the life your soul came in to experience?
Yeah.
And you know what your soul wants to experience because it'll talk to you and it'll tell you. But you have to get really quiet. And I do think that's what Squam provides. It provides this, like, I don't have to worry about groceries. I don't have to worry about laundry. You can roll around in campus all week long in your pajamas. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
And there's no makeup. There's no hair. You know what I mean? It's just like you just show up. So when you get really quiet, all of a sudden you're here. I don't want to work that job. I've always wanted to be in ceramics. I've always wanted to move to Chicago. You hear it. And you're really scary too when you hear it. And that's where I say no drama, no trauma. Because I remember really clearly my marriage, we'd been in conversation for like 3 years and it kept looping around, right? Because we were doing the thinking. And I was in it. It was, it doesn't matter. I was in this like weekend writer's workshop. It's really crappy, but whatever. Doesn't matter. It was really cool. That Saturday morning, I had my journal and I don't know what the prompt was, but the prompt had me writing and all of a sudden out on the page wrote, I don't want to be married anymore. And as soon as it was on the page, I had never had that thought. I had never had the thought. It was on the page and I slammed the book shut like, did anyone see that? You know what I mean? Like I'm shocked. But once it surfaced.
You can't look surfaced, away. Yeah, it was the same. No. It's funny. It was the same for me too, where it was sort of building and building and building and it was circular. And then there was this, it was like for me, a light switch. And I just knew.
How do you feel your yes? How do you know your yes?
That's a good question. So I am somebody who has worked a lot on not over, I mean, I'm an academic. So like I live in my head 95% of the time. And so I've been, the things that have worked most for me are somatic, like are body based. So I feel it in my gut, in my chest, and it can be like something I'm excited about or something I'm terrified about. And it's probably slightly different, but it's just like this deep knowing that I can't look away from or can't ignore. And I don't know. It's a work in progress.
It's a practice.
It is a practice. I think Norway is going to be really amazing for me for that reason. Yeah.
Not going to be intellectual. It's going to be very somatic.
I'm excited. Yeah.
Living, being like such a being experience. Yeah. Something I wanted to add, you know, for her leading story is trust in yourself, really seeing this as a practice of trusting yourself and celebrating yourself. I mean, I think self-loathing is pretty common within women because of misogyny. It's so internalized.
Exactly.
So when you really start to look around and say like, gosh, I really love the way you set up that bookcase. I really love that sofa. I love this thing that I made. I love how I did that. When most women do not say those things to themselves. And that's building trust in your taste, in your choices, in the things that make you happy. Maybe it doesn't make someone else happy. Maybe they don't have the same sense of humor. Maybe they don't get excited by that really fun figurine or that yarn or that whatever. But when you do, and you know that's something that's true for you, to begin a practice of honoring it, that's part of developing trust, self-appreciation, which is the way you start hearing your yes more clearly and feeling safe in following it.
Yeah.
And feeling like, okay, yeah, I think everyone else on my street has a white car, but you know what? I really want an orange car. I'm going to buy an orange car. And it's just, it's just one of those things. And we can all practice it in different places in different ways.
And in small ways too, right? And
again, drama, no trauma. You just building it up until you feel, because you don't want to set yourself up where you can get attacked, because everyone's a critic. So you don't want to set yourself up. Like right now, if someone says to me, "Wow, Elizabeth, I don't like your glasses. I don't like your hair." I'm just like, they're not for you. Like, it literally doesn't bother me. And on a creative sense, well, you put your art out to the world. And I'm a writer, so I put my art out in the world. I wrote a novel in 2019 that my cousin really wanted to read. And then I saw her at a wedding, and she loves to read. She reads all the time. And she sat next to me, and I could tell she was avoiding me. And I haven't seen her in years, right? So the first words out of my mouth was, "Suzanne, you didn't like the book." And she goes, "I didn't like your book." And I'm like, "Guess what? I go into museums every day, and I don't like that, don't like that, don't like that." I go to the airport, bestseller, bestseller, bestseller. Like, wouldn't read it. So I literally don't care. Do you know why? Because I like it.
Yeah.
And I value what I like.
Yeah.
And if I valued what she liked, she's a wonderful person. I love my cousin. If I valued her opinion over my own, I would feel constantly vulnerable to criticism.
Yeah.
Because her opinion would matter in that way. When in fact, it really doesn't. I was like, yeah, I can see why you wouldn't like that book. It's about mothers and daughters and mothers who didn't behave well. I can see why you wouldn't like that. Anyway.
That's amazing. I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast.
I know I talk a blue streak when I start going. I'm very passionate.
You did. No. Look at me. I have a post-it note. I was checking everything off. Thank you so much. This was wonderful to connect with you. And now I'm really excited about Norway.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Elizabeth just as much as I did. I wanted to point out a few things that I have been struck by since interviewing Elizabeth a couple of weeks ago, things that I've returned to in my head as we were phasing out of 2023 and now into 2024. One lesson is about getting out of your day-to-day habits, right? Engaging in creativity, and how doing those very small shifts can help you reset, reboot, rejuvenate, and especially when you're going through a difficult season. Another thing I took away from our conversation is how critical it is to learn to trust yourself. And Elizabeth is just like, I don't know, my model of somebody who just embodies this. I took one of her classes a few years ago, and I've been using that. If it's not a hell yes, it's a no for years now. And it has actually really served me very well. One new thing I learned in this interview from Elizabeth is what she calls no drama, no trauma. And it's interesting because the way that I frame this is more in working with clients and talking about how small steps can lead to big changes. And a lot of times we want the big change really fast, but going for the big leap or going for the big change can be really traumatic. So maybe the best next tiny step is what you should be doing, both to kind of protect your nervous system, to test ideas, to see how it feels to do that. Of course, if you are feeling the tug toward changing anything about your current career or life, I would absolutely be honored to support you. You can sign up for a free call with me. I call them Voice Your Value calls. I'll have the link in the show notes, but you can also just go to voiceyourvaluecall.com. I save spots for calls with women about their careers and their lives every week. I love talking to people and hearing what your struggles are, what your superpowers are, what you want from life. And these calls are designed to support you in building up confidence about your worth and your value and setting you up, like giving you the courage to know, like Elizabeth, that you can trust yourself in knowing exactly what's the next right step for you. And that's a wrap on this episode of Her Leading Story. If you love this episode, please help me reach more women by leaving a review wherever you're listening. Thank you so much for being here, and I'll see you next week.